this One Health concept came through. One Health was invented or first described in, I think it was 500 BC, so it's not new. But really what it's saying is that you've got this link between human health, animal health, and the environment we all live in.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Kemin invites you to optimize animal feed quality and safety with our portfolio of solutions. Learn more at kemin.com/AG. Evonik, we are sciencing the global food challenge.
Welcome to the Feed Science Podcast brought to you by Wisenetics. I am Carlos Campabadal from Kansas State University as your host today, dedicated to bringing you the latest insights and discussions from the food feed science and food industry. Please get ready to expand your knowledge and stay ahead in today's episode. So today it is with great pleasure that we have as a guest Dr. Keith Werner, who is a professor in the Department of Food Science at the University of Guelph. Dr. Werner, welcome again to the Feed Science Podcast, and it's a great pleasure to having you here. I know we recently did another podcast, and you have done several in the past, but just to introduce yourself, you know, minds or our audience, especially if they're new ones, can learn a little bit about you.
Oh, sure. Thanks for having me back, Carlos. So I'm a faculty here at the Department of Food Science. I've had a very convoluted career. You know, started with a chef, and I went to become a food scientist, then went microbial physiologist, then biosensor research, and then food microbiology, and I landed on food microbiology here. So I've been here since 2002. I've established a research group based on food microbiology, food safety, and that's included things like fresh produce, meat. We've done some work on feed and emerging pathogens. And obviously, I do teaching in terms of food safety management, food microbiology, industrial microbiology, principles of food science, all these kind of things. So it's a very broad sort of background I've got. But certainly, applied research is where our strongest point is.
And you know, it is very impressive how you went through your career. It gives you a different perspective. I like the chef thing. Like I said in the past, in a previous episode, I come from my aunt is also a chef, and I come from that also some other family members. And when you could combine those skill sets and the science of it, I think it makes a lot of sense, especially as you do your food science, food safety related research. So very important for us and of course for our audience throughout the podcast today. Comment if you have any questions, and we'll make sure to get them to Dr. Werner so he could answer them later on. So let's start today, you know, a little bit. You talk a little bit about your work in food safety overall. Let's start a little bit to give our audience an explanation of how you perceive the importance of food safety for the animal feed or animal food perspective, and I noticed that you have that One Health approach overall. So maybe explain that a little bit more in detail.
Yeah, so basically, I would say about 10 years ago even, everybody had this notion about let's tackle pathogens like Salmonella and E. coli, Listeria at the end of processing. They soon realized that doesn't quite work. And so this One Health concept came through. One Health was invented or first described in, I think it was 500 BC, so it's not new. But really what it's saying is that you've got this link between human health, animal health, and the environment they all live in. And really what it's saying is just a handle saying, you take care of the front end, animal production, then you're going to have less pathogens and less people getting ill. So certainly in the feed business, as you probably definitely know more about, is that when I first arrived in Guelph, I would say about 2003, you know, basically I went to this feed mill and I was absolutely astonished by it. You know, I was expecting a food processing factory. 1930s mill, these machines were kind of going dust everywhere and things like that. And they had me to come to solve a salmonella issue we were having. They're actually a pet food mill. And it was interesting is that they were getting all these salmonella hits and they couldn't figure out why they were washing things down and things like that. And we actually found it where they had this sort of crack in one of the pumps. And what they were doing is every time they washed it, we were rehydrating this dry feed, letting the salmonella grow, and that's why they had persistence. So things have moved on since then. And I think the importance of feed health, not just to animals, but certainly to the final consumer, has really come to the front now where, yes, you know, you've got to have pathogen-free food, and obviously regulations in the US and in Canada, you have to have basically almost human standards for any type of feed. Over in Europe, they're a bit more flexible, so we say. But so that's the importance of it. Get your feed right, and then less chance and opportunity. It's not saying feed is the only source, obviously not. You need, but it's a part of the jigsaw you need to have for definite.
And you bring a very important point. You know, my background, professional background, is in the feed industry, and my interaction from an extension perspective here at Kansas State and worldwide is that the concept of a feed mill, I don't see that people think as a food industry. They see it more like, oh, I'm in a farm just making feed for animals. Doesn't really matter, but it does, you know, and the conditions and I get your feeling about coming in thinking it's a nice pet food industry. I mean, I know it was some years ago, but, you know, and expecting something different. And because I still see that quite a lot. And that perspective, I think, is very important overall, that if you start earlier in that supply chain overall controlling things, there would be less risk later on as you continue with that. So being said that, so for our audience to understand a little bit more, what do you think are the main pathogens that could be present in animal feed, and how can they affect the animal health and safety overall, that food supply? Maybe we could talk a little bit about some examples if you have some.
Well, certainly, you know, with the avian influenza, just the most recent one, and obviously not so long ago, it was a porcine diarrhea virus going around. I think that underlines the importance of feed. And so definitely animal pathogens for definite. But in terms of human pathogens, I guess, which I'm interested in, due to the fact where food safety, things like salmonella, obviously, toxigenic E. coli, listeria, clostridium perfringens. And the thing is, these pathogens are encountered in raw material use of feed. You know, even if you're doing plant-based feed, I think there was a statistic somewhere where someone did a prevalence study, and they were finding 10% of soybeans with salmonella, and, you know, for things like that. So the interesting part is, though, like, even though you've got pathogens in feed, does it translate to transmission to the animal? And it's varied, yeah, because even when we consume salmonella, you know, the outcome is based on a lot of different things about dose, infectivity, our susceptibility and things like that. And it's the same with animals. But I was involved in an interesting case of Listerian goats, which went to court. I was an expert witness. And this story goes about this feed that was supplied by it was pelleted feed for goats. And they delivered it. So it wasn't really processed correctly. It was very moist. And they put it in a silo. And obviously the Listeria got somewhere in and started growing. And he fed it to the sort of goats, and basically the goat herd was decimated, you know, abortion, things like this. And I think that illustrates to me the importance of why feed is safe and or needs to be safe, because it has big implications. Now, not so long ago, I would say 10 years ago, you know, it was interesting that this case happened about 10 years ago, and the defense of the feed industry, they had this consultant, I won't say any names, so I will get into trouble. Their defense was, look, we don't have these food safety measures. No other feed mill does. And that was their defense, saying, well, we're as bad as everyone else. But and obviously they lost the case, because you can't really, even back in those times, ever since the start, you know, the regulations have been, you can't provide feed that is injurious to health of humans and animals. But it's only when the Modernization Act kicked in, people started taking it seriously. So, yeah, feed is part of the puzzle, but, you know, salmonella can get into say poultry, you know, it can, and we've actually isolated an outbreak strain of associated with poultry right back to your feed. I don't know how they did it, but they did. So feed's definitely important.
Yeah, no, and it is very interesting how in the past people didn't even think about it, and now, you know, as science continues moving forward with new things coming out and health issue, and then of course overall we've been trying. I feel and I think, well, not feel is, I think it's a fact that kind of like the pet food industry kind of got a little bit ahead compared to the rest of the livestock from that perspective, but in a way, pet food seems often to be overlooked when we talk about feed safety, which is a hot topic today. So what will be the risks that you see from that perspective, feed safety on the pet food? And I say this because, you know, here at Kansas State, we're very focused on overall pet food as a whole program overall. So what will be those kind of risks and challenges that you'd see overall from that perspective? Being pet food now these days, you know, animals, pets have a different meaning to what they did many years ago, you know, compared to what they're now.
Arnie, you're exactly right. And it's quite amazing when I looked at pet food, yeah, I did that first project, but it was very low cost and low value and things like that. But in recent years, it's become one of the most valuable markets there. You know, people swapping kids for pets, I suppose, is one way, but that's besides the point. And obviously, what really triggered things was this raw pet food trend, this value added. You know, people don't mind spending $20 on raw pet food, but they'll go into the supermarket, buy something themselves. They'll say, well, that's a bit expensive to do that. So we treat our pets well. And the problem we've got, though, is that because it's raw pet food, obviously they're open to salmonella. And it's not the fact that people are eating the pet food, even though some of it looked quite good. It's that point of handling, transmitting it to the dog or the cat or whatever, and that then transmitting it to the infant, because infants are very susceptible to salmonella. And the industry obviously has been on a rough ride of recent years in that they've had to recall product, for example, like anything raw pet food with poultry because it had salmonella. And their sort of defense in the pet food industry saying, I could go out and get a chicken breast for human consumption, and there's a 20% chance that I'll have salmonella in it. So why don't they go to the same standards? Obviously, they started pushing back against the regulators. And there was a point a few months ago, I think it was, where they were requested to do a recall because their product had toxigenic E. coli in. And the industry said, the actual company refused to do it, which is a very brave thing for the FDA when you're talking to the FDA. So anyway, with pet food, it's a special thing because the value is in the rawness of the product. And you have to have interventions to decontaminate them. And because of the price difference, they can use the fancy technologies, but it's certainly a separate thing. And in the US especially, heavily regulated. Here in Canada, no regulations at all, neither in Europe. So I think people in the US feel like aggravated a little bit. But, you know, the value of the market is so big, you can't just say, I'm going into overfeed.
And you know, as we do here a lot of, and here where Kansas State University, Manhattan, Kansas, is located, where's what is called a pet food corridor. So we have different companies that from the health, from the pet food itself, and a lot of work going on. But I always tell a joke when they come here and interact with me that you might, for a specific company, that we're clients, but in the past we were double clients. And they always ask me, why you were double clients? It's, well, because my dog ate the food, and then my oldest son, when he was a toddler, he also picked on it, and the dog wanted to eat the my son's food, and then my son the pet food. But nothing ever happened. I tell them. So you got good food safety procedures there in your facility. So I understand the risk from that. Especially my wife is also a food microbiologist. So understand that. So it's very important into that. And then before we go into the next questions, I just want to share with our audience to please share the video if you learned something new today. And on that sense, so going back to that, I like overall when we talk about food safety and feed safety or animal food safety, as they call it here in the United States now, how does that, from your perspective, how does feed safety contribute to the bigger picture of feeding the world in a sustainable and at the same time protecting public health? Because, you know, when you think about how the population of the world is growing and our grains and food is growing, you know, there's going to be a lot of need to have food. But how do we do that from a food safety perspective, being at the same time sustainable for the environment?
Yeah, it's a very good question, isn't it? I always find it quite strange, isn't it? We talk about sustainability, but then we talk about depopulation and the population crash. And it's almost like, say, a growing culture. We're still having to grow and grow and grow until we reach a stationary phase, which is, as you rightly said, things aren't sustainable anymore. So it is important. And obviously the big sort of movement is saying, we don't need animals at all. You know, let's do this sort of artificial cheese, artificial meat. As you've probably seen, I don't think people buy into it. And so basically what I think animals will be here, thank God, for a long time, and the way of producing them. But how do we feed them? And the thing is, you can look at grains, and the bioethanol business obviously is really cutting into that. So people are looking at this, what we call this loop cycle, isn't it? The cycle of waste material from plants, waste material from animals, bring it in, and maybe if you want to ferment it with microbes. Or what the trend here in Canada is we've got a big insect sort of movement. Even I think the original idea was feed them to people, but I think soon they pivoted, saying, well, no, maybe it's animal feed. And people think that's a good thing because this is sustainable. We're using waste materials that nobody wants. But the key thing is, and it's, they say, oh, it's safe because these insects are enclosed, fermenting enclosed. But very much like food industry or the feed mill industry today, when you're bringing in raw material, you're basically bringing in pathogens as well. And the big risk of, for example, with insects is that, yes, you bring in raw materials, be it waste plant material, waste animal material, things like this, fish meal, whatever, and you're spreading it through the plant. So, yes, you might have insects which are enclosed, but maybe they're spreading things like salmonella between them. And the other worrying thing, which I never thought about, but thinking about it, is that we all know those famous days where animals were fed to animals and resulted in BSC. There's this sort of concern about these insect proteins that if you feed fish meal, for example, to insects, and use that same fish meal as fish food, you could be transmitting things that you unintended. So it's an interesting area. But in terms of food sustainability, I think that's the only way that can happen. In that, yes, it will be this sort of loop system where you by using waste and then you put it in insects or fermenting. But I don't think it makes it safer. I think it's, if you want an analogy, it's a bit like indoor farming with fresh produce, saying, well, we're inside, it's enclosed. But when you're bringing in pathogens, you're bringing them in through raw materials, be it soil and seed. And once it's enclosed, it's there. So to answer your question about sustainability, I think that is the future. Now, whether it's the right future, it's just to be on guard, I think. And I think, as you say, we can't go back to those days where you look at feed mills and say, well, the feed mills in the US are much more advanced than we are. No, these are basically almost human food processing facilities, and they need the same control.
And you know, very important, because when you think about overall safety, food safety, you're right. A lot of those contaminants come from the raw materials, and it is a little bit of a cycle when you think about it. You know, when I always thinking about sustainability, which sustainability you have economic, environmental, resources, operative. There's different areas into it, plus the perception of how it's gained and applied, but. One thing I always, you know, you have to think about it is like we bring grain that maybe has been, when the plant was growing, used with manure. You know, with manure, there's always going to be a higher risk. Yes, you're not using maybe conventional fertilizer from chemicals, but there's a higher risk on the food safety. So all those things is important to look at them, but also thinking about not affecting health and throughout the whole food supply chain. So very, very important from that perspective. So, and then for our audience, please like us. Give us, of course, the good old thumbs up if you like this episode today. So, Dr. Werner, thinking about overall promising to when you think about how to improve feed safety and how it strengthens the role in overall food security, which is a very important topic that we've been talking about, what are some of those innovation or strategies that look more promising to you that maybe you're working or colleagues or you have seen there overall in the from the research and academic perspective or industry too?
Obviously, research-wise and interventions isn't so big these days, yeah, because I always put it down to the fact that the way funding works, we've lost that innovation, a big next thing. So we're basically based on the old technologies. But when we look at food safety, a lot of people always fall back on testing, even now. You know, I hear people saying, we'll do more testing, that makes the product safe. No, it doesn't. You just know what the problem is. And certainly in our sort of field, we work with a hydroxy radical process, which is basically combining UV, hydrogen peroxide, and ozone. And we're like a terminal step. So when we're looking at kibble, you know, pet food, because pet food is the lucrative business, you know, we can decontaminate them without changing the characteristics. Obviously, high pressure processing for raw pet food is still there. Certainly, extrusion technologies coming up, fermentation. But I think the best innovation you can have in terms of interventions is actually sanitation. So the thing with the pet feed industry, and like I say, I'm not being very broad, is that they've kind of just bought into a reality saying we have to produce human food standard. You know, we should be able to sit at the end of the line and eat that food with confidence that it's not there. And I think when I see failures in the food, pet food industry, it's lack of sanitation or breakdown of sanitation. And you go a long way with looking at simple things like separating the raw material from the finished product, but also doing environmental testing. But the big issue, not just in, only in pet feed, it's in human feed as well, is how do you decontaminate low moisture environments? Because when a bit like the idea about the salmonella and pet food, where they literally went with hose pipes and spreading water, water's the enemy. So I think the sanitation techniques there, you know, maybe based on UV, maybe based on hydroxy radicals or other things, they're the innovations that can help the pet food industry. But I always think, like in food industry in general, we need that innovation, that breakthrough. Maybe it is gas plasma, maybe it is infrared or something like, or electromagnetic fields. But it's almost like it's a special cause because you've got such a high volume in such a and high throughput in a low-cost industry in a sense. You're the expert, I know, but I always vision, so you're not going to be a millionaire very quickly in the feed business unless you're really at the top. But we're developing additives as well that can kill off salmonella. Admittedly, it's in flour, not pet food, but it can be translated. So I think it's that thinking outside the box, innovation, not repeating what other people have done and not relying on just simple testing to say, yes, it's safe or not. Because at the end of the day, you know, the more testing you do, the more product you have to divert, the less sustainable you become.
Yeah, and I agree with you with your testing comment. I mean, the more you test, now you know more about the problem what you have. It's just the past we didn't test. We didn't know. we know better now. So
it's time for our famous three.
Deep in the jungle, nature holds the secrets to healthier, happier chickens. Science is unlocking those secrets with Optient, the revolutionary lighting innovation for poultry farming. By mimicking nature, Optient Gradient Lighting creates a unique floor-level lighting gradient that improves feed conversion by up to 4 points, slashes energy use by 70%, and keeps flocks calm and stress-free. That means better animal welfare and a more efficient farm. Want to learn more? Optient Gradient Lighting is now available exclusively through your local Valco dealership or email optient@val-co.com today.
No, this is great information, and we do appreciate it. So we're coming here to the end of our podcast, but before we finish off, I think this is great information for our audience, and I would like to ask you, from your, what will be a good resource that for like a book or a website that will you recommend anybody from the academic or the industry to learn more about animal feed safety or food safety overall, so they could kind of learn a bit more or stay up to date on what is going on the information out there?
Well, certainly the primary resource I always go to is the food FAO, the Food Agriculture Organization of the United Nations. They're kind of a low key. People say, well, they're for developing countries and things like that, and not. You know, they're very good base research on anything, animal health or anything like that. And the thing is, they get expertise from all the member states and that. So what you're reading is real, because I think in a lot of senses, if you start going to company websites and other sort of sources, they spin it differently. And I think in the age of social media, even more, isn't it? You know, they can spin things. So I always say, look at those resources. But as you rightly said, I think at the start about feed associations, these are the places you go, and those conferences, I don't know about in the feed, but I did go to one or two feed conferences. It's actually meeting people, seeing what's new and what's, they're the best ones, because when you read it in a paper, that's years old, essentially. So those sort of things would be very good.
No, those great recommendations. And as we move along, you know, I know you have, like me, like an academic background preparing future professionals. What would you recommend to for a young professional to look forward to, set aside and make their career to stay up to date on information? What would you recommend somebody starting their career, either after grad school or after their undergrad, or just in a technical level, especially somebody from the food or animal industry?
Yeah, so I think when you graduate, I don't think anybody really knows what they want to do. I don't think they knew what they wanted to do in high school, and it carries on, I tell you. I always find it's almost like fate, though. It's like if you find a job that really motivates you, because it's sometimes very difficult to get motivated. And I know this from sort of graduates and postdocs, is that they had this ambition of becoming a researcher, sort of a quality technician. So you've got to kind of look for it. You've got to make things happen in a certain degree, but take opportunities when they arise as well. And I've seen like a few occasions where people's had the chance to, but they said, well, I think it's too risky. But no, find that niche, what you're interested in. And then if you can give your 100% in that, and you'll gather all the information, you'll make contacts, make your career a success. But I think a lot of times when I see people, it's almost like, I'll sit back and let it happen. It doesn't work like that. You know, try to have a goal, try to get an interest, and then literally drive best you can. Obviously, fate does have a decision, but I always say if you can push it, you're doing good.
Great. No, thank you. This is great advice, and I like to always hear about those, especially with experienced, great researchers and overall in the industry. So with that, thank you very much, Dr. Werner, for today's podcast. This concludes another episode of the Feed Science Podcast presented by Wisenetics. Thank you for our audience for joining us today. Please don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to stay updated to our future episodes. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a review, a comment, because your feedback is very valuable to us to continue to improve. Until next time, this is Carlos Campabadal from the Feed Science Podcast signing off. Thank you.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.